Homestyle Green, episode 249, how to build a healthy home for an ideal lifestyle. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Mike Pickering is making a better place to live for him and his family. He's building a little house in Napier. It's not quite as little as some of the houses that Mike has built in the past. He's had a little bit of experience building tiny homes, and that is a bit of a precursor to his current project, which you can find online at ourlifeblock.co.nz. He posts on Instagram, and there's some fantastic photos of the progress that he's making quite rapidly now. Getting the enclosure on and getting to some of the pretty impressive stages of his build of a beautiful little home, a healthy home. It won't be completely passive house, as he explains the reasons for that during my chat, but it will be a very comfortable and energy efficient home on a lifestyle block in Napier. So here is Mike Pickering. I asked him to describe for us where he is and why he chose that location.
So we're located in Napier in New Zealand, one of the sunnier locations around the country. We moved here from Whanganui, and I don't think we're going to go anywhere. we managed to stumble across a 8-acre piece of land, just weren't really looking, about 5-6 years ago when the market was a bit more of a downturn. The property had at least half a dozen major issues with it that turned most people away at the gate. They literally didn't even come and look at the existing shed on the property, but we had a couple of looks and mucked around with thinking about it for a while, and then just decided, oh, well, we'll just buy it. As I said, a bit of a quieter market, so we sort of had time to think about it, and yeah, best thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
So the property's facing east and north primarily, so we get the sun straight off the ocean, flat view out to the east, protected from most of the winds except for easterlies, which are not so common here, but do cool you down in the summer, which is nice. And yeah, we decided to, all along, the property had an existing shed on it, which needed a lot of work. But really, it was just strip out and put it all back together again properly. And then we always had the plan to build a house on the property at some point. So that some point started a couple of years ago when we sort of did our own conceptual design ourselves, me and my wife. And then we've gone from there. And in the meantime, we've been living on a mobile tiny home, sort of as a stepping stone, which is working really well. But with expanding family, it's sort of it's time to move on and learn all those things from building a tiny home to putting that into practice for a real home.
What were some of those issues that put other people off from the section?
There was a lot of unconsented work. The shed was basically turned into a home, but none of it was consented, and it was pretty much all done poorly. Like an example of that, they had the vanity, like when we ripped it all apart, I was horrified in some places. They had the vanity waste terminating in the wall cavity without any corrugated iron on the outside, with a bird nest on top and electrical wiring passing underneath.
Oh, cool.
Yep, so it was pretty hectic. So there was other issues, like the septic tank had been put in, not consented. The driveway was rough as guts. There was sort of a pass site and stuff to deal with, which is all these things were solvable. Low-lying area with flooding and stuff like that. So it just initially... Yeah, when you looked at the specs, it put a lot of people off.
So some challenges there, but if you're thinking of basically starting from scratch anyway, a lot of that is, like I say, resolvable, or you're just going to tear it down and start again with your own concepts.
Yep.
Now, tell us a bit about yourself. You mentioned you put a design together. You're not... That's not unfamiliar territory for you, is it, as an engineer?
No, not unfamiliar. It does seem to come reasonably naturally to me. Funny enough, I studied a Bachelor of Engineering and did product development, which is basically taking a product from sort of idea through to commercialization, a real broad degree. Yeah. I was lined up to go to architecture school in Wellington, and for some reason I pulled the pin on that very last minute and ended up doing the engineering route. So I've sort of almost come full circle, and I'm almost sort of leaning back to the architectural with the building science I really enjoy as well. My wife studied fashion design, so she's pretty clued up with design as well. So together we sort of, me coming from more of an engineering science background, who's coming from more of a design flair, making things look really cool, we sort of worked together quite well.
So
we designed up the house after many concepts. It's actually a bit harder than you think designing a home. After many concepts, we sort of, you know, got something that fit the lay of the land, our requirements, but sort of positioned well with the sun and the wind, growing family, and all of that sort of stuff.
What help have you had along the way? At some stages, you had to get a real architect and other professionals to help out.
Yeah, so the first thing I saw, which is probably a little bit untraditional to the normal design build model, was to get a professional energy modeler in, which you recommended to me, Matthew, so thanks for that. So we got Jason at Sustainable Engineering to help us out, and he was he was just phenomenal. Like, he was kind of like me with way, way, way more knowledge in that area than I could ever have. So we worked with him. He sort of laid down about six scenarios early on. He had a building code scenario right through to a passive house, and gave us all the numbers on each one, how much heat loading and whatnot you have for each scenario, like how much money.
Were you considering building code, or was that just Jason showing you what the difference would be?
It was Jason just showing us. Always wanted to do just, I wanted to do something better, definitely better than standard, like from traveling overseas for about 6 years.
Yep.
I just remember one turning point when I was in Switzerland, and I was staying at someone's house, and the walls were about half a meter thick, and I was like, what is going on here? New Zealand walls are all 90 mils thick, aren't they? What is this all about? Yeah. So sort of
they have water draining into them and birds' nests.
So from that was a sort of bit of a turning point. I was like, what's going on here? I think there's more to building a home than sort of what we're doing just in New Zealand. So, I've always been that way inclined. So, with him setting out those models, he sort of had, different stages. And we were like, well, I don't think we're trying to do this on a budget as well, which is a big thing.
Yep.
So we were like, well, passive house is awesome. Like, that would be the mecca. But then, of course, it costs. And I know it doesn't cost a whole heap more if you sort of do it smartly, but we've sort of just ended up sitting in behind the passive house standard. So
you're targeting low energy standard now. Do you remember any of those numbers and the variance of not so much the inputs, but the resulting performance prediction from, say, code versus what you're targeting now in terms of, what you're expecting it to be like as a home?
The one that kind of blew me away a lot was the heating demand for the home. So he did sort of, the building code was around 110. Not sure the units, can't remember the units on that. They will just say 110. And then, so we've ended up down at 18. So it's our heating demand sort of, in my eyes, at least five times less than it would be from a minimum building code home. So
is that the kilowatt hours per square meter to maintain the indoor temperature?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a significant. And if you push that, I mean, assuming that you're planning to stay at this house for a while, it's a bit of a lifestyle choice that you've made. That's a significant saving over a period of time that you'll be living in the house into the future.
Yeah, exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. We are planning to stay there, I mean, at least probably 10 years, but you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It was sort of designed the home anyway to be sort of future-proofed. Like, yep. I can see New Zealand's going to go this way. The rest of the world, watch a lot of stuff in America and Europe, and, you know, they're already sort of up at these levels almost as a standard in places. So I can see we're just trying to future-proof the home. So in 20 years' time, the house will be still really, really relevant when we do come to sell. But we're not building the house to sell. We're building it for ourselves.
Yeah. What were you doing in Switzerland?
I did an OE in the UK, did the sort of classic, got a passport over there. So doing the classic, just traveling around Europe. So that was that would have been a weekend bender, I'd say.
Right. but fairly significant. But it wasn't just Switzerland. You spent some time around Europe and traveling around. Were there other buildings that you remember, or was it just kind of seeing a different way of doing things over there that you have brought back to wanting to do yourself?
Another game changer was UPVC windows in the UK, which they primarily use. And I remember I was like, how do you open this window?
Yeah.
It doesn't open outwards, and the handle twists. And
handle
I was like,
goes
what's...
all funny ways. Yeah.
I was like, what is going on here? So it took me a few moments to figure out how that worked, and then realized it came inward and tilted. And you can have all those, you can lock your home up and have it all ventilated. And I was like, and again, seeing the thickness of that and the seals, I was like, man, I've got to have this. So that's exactly what we did.
Now, I can see behind you there, beautiful day in Napier. It's probably mid-20s. You got the windows open, fresh air blowing in, doors probably open. And that's the vision. I mean, Napier, a lot of that East Coast is stunning. It often competes as one of the sunniest places in the country. Indoor-outdoor flow is a big part of the perceived Kiwi life, but what you're talking about there is windows that seal and keep all that outside. Has that been an issue, or do you have any troubles explaining why you'd want to keep that beautiful outside?
I mean, I suppose we haven't got to the finish point of the home yet, so you haven't got people, they haven't quite got to that sort of asking that question yet, I suppose. We've designed the home. It's got a big French door opening out to a deck, as well as a big sliding door and another couple of sort of more entry doors. So I think the way we will operate it, we won't have it locked up 24/7. We'll open it up when the days require, and then close it up, you know, when the sun goes down, when you need to later on in the afternoon to hold that. Explaining some of the, in terms of the actual building, explaining some of the, like, we can't penetrate this airtight barrier here. Like, some of the trades are like, you can see them thinking, why would you want to put tape on that little hole there?
Does it really matter?
Exactly. So, but once you sort of explain it a little bit, they sort of, all good.
And I want to come back to the fact that you reached out to Jason first of all, and like you say, that's not necessarily the common way of doing things, where you go to an engineer or someone like that at the outset. I mean, that's really putting function before form. Did that influence the overall design, do you think, looking at that performance before looking at the, I mean, you might have been scrapbooking claddings and kitchen details and that sort of thing, but did it change the overall concept and the floor plan by looking at that the energy side first before looking at what it was going to look like?
The short answer is no. We had my wife and myself had a pretty good idea on the form. We wanted to go with a more, I suppose, a Scandinavian, quite simple, extruded with gable form. With sort of simple window openings and stuff. And we tried different configurations of that. We ended up with sort of two pods at 90 degrees to each other with a little connection. Mm-hmm. And that's what we sent through to Jason, and that's what we've ended up with. There's been some minor changes to windows, but more to do with other things than in terms of window sizing and stuff, but that's more to do with build and stuff than anything else.
Did you look at any prefabricated options?
Yes. So we're doing this house as a self-build. So I'm building the majority of it myself with help from friends and family and a few professionals along the way we needed. Prefabrication was very important because time's going to be critical here. I'm not a builder by trade, so it's going to take me longer anyway. So to get things prefabricated, in my mind, is going to be it's going to save a lot of time, and things are going to be a lot more accurate, like putting them together, because essentially it's Lego blocks. So we did timber sips walls and steel sips roof, which is our main prefabricated parts of the build.
Right. So you didn't look at any sort of modular housing options where you just sort of buy the whole thing or nearly complete and plonk it down?
No. I always wanted to sort of build it from the ground up myself.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But you have done a tiny house, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we're living in a single story, 7.5 meter by 3 meter. So it's around 20 square meter tiny house with our daughter living in there, who's around 2.5. So that works really well. And we've learned a lot. We built that ourselves, did sort of the same sort of process, and learned a lot from that, and even built that sort of to a similar standard. Like, I knew air tightness was a thing, but didn't quite know how to execute it. We put like timber windows in there, yet they were reclaimed, but just thinking about that thermal efficiency. And it is a warm little home. Like, we've got some good solar heat gain into it, and effectively the oven overheats the home, so it's pretty warm.
Has that been quite good learning, do you think, going through that process first?
Oh, 100%. It was really good. And just because it's a lot smaller, that it's a lot more manageable to take little chunks on and think about it, where a bigger house is, there's a little bit more going on, I guess. So, that was a really, really good step.
And I think even that, you can't joke about the oven overheating. I mean, that can happen in a passive house too, because, yes, it's bigger, but if you do it as sealed up, then these are the sorts of things that you need to think about, and there's nothing like experiencing it firsthand to really hammer that home and really understand the importance of those energy balances.
Exactly. Like, for example, that tiny house, if we didn't have our daughter in there, I would almost say we wouldn't need a heat source at all. Like, it holds heat overnight. You know, you wake up, it's probably 17, maybe 16 degrees, which isn't too bad. It would be nice to keep it more around 18. And that's on a sort of, obviously a winter day without sun. So, it's pretty phenomenal. But we do have a little electric heater on a thermostat when we need to.
And, of course, we should do a bit of a plug here for We Make Change. That's We with a two E's. We Make Change. That's up and running, and you've got a whole heap of resources there, plus some other services that you provide through that site.
Yeah, that's correct. We sort of set that up originally blogging and doing quite a few YouTube videos, which we're doing with this current house build as well.
Yep.
And then from there, I was like, I just loved it so much. I was like, we need to turn this into a bit of a business model. So now we're sort of focusing on doing tiny home tiny home trailers and helping people with their tiny house design, talking about a lot of the stuff that I've learned along the way. So yeah, that's working, working out really well actually. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
I quite like some of the layouts you've got there and the drawings, because I find that with a lot of tiny homes, people take pictures and they look amazing, but it's quite hard to kind of see how it all fits together and how you'd actually have your life inside that whole space. But with some of the drawings you've got and those house plans, it's quite useful because you can kind of see all the bits in one image. And obviously, and you've had some good traction with YouTube there. I'm interested. I mean, tiny homes is I think it now it's more than a fad, right? It's going to stick around. It's sort of getting established. It's growing. If anything, it's not just something that was trendy for a while and has disappeared. What do you see as the place for tiny homes in real life? Is it a transition, kind of just how you've used it in your block, where you sort of do that as a starter and then still move into a full size house later on, or can tiny homes be more than that?
I think yeah, they can definitely be more than that. They fit into a number of different use cases, I guess. Thinking about a few of those, like if I went back in time and this was sort of a thing, being at university for 4 years, you're just spending a whole heap of money on accommodation, that you could set one of those up at your mate's place or something in the backyard and pay them a bit of rent and maybe even still use their kitchen or whatever it is. But that would be a great use case. I've also seen a lot of people that have had their kids and they want to downsize and simplify. They might have even had a breakup or something and they just want to downsize everything and simplify their life. That's another one. And the other big one is people just coming into the residential housing market in New Zealand, which is proving to be super challenging at the moment only going north. So yeah, it's a great stepping stone for younger couples or individuals to sort of get a home under their feet, I guess.
And then
sort of do what we did, I suppose, and use that as a you know, you might be able to sell that in 5 years' time, and you know, transition into a larger house. So yeah, I think it's part of the solution for sure.
And is that most of your time now when you're not working on your home? Is that what you're spending a bit of time with that consulting?
Yes. So I'm just at the moment, it's working well having that as an own business, being able to juggle the time, building a house and doing the family thing as well. Don't have a whole heap of time for a lot of other stuff at the moment. I'm trying to keep the social agenda going, but a little bit of recreation as well. But it is quite challenging trying to find
time. Well, no doubt you'll be inviting lots of people around shortly to help lift up those prefabricated panels and help out around the building site. What have been the biggest challenges so far in the whole process from going through from, you're fairly fortunate in the timing of purchasing land, but then going into the design phase and now looking at finding materials and suppliers, what's been the biggest challenge for you?
I've actually taken a lot of it in my stride, to be honest. I had a reasonable idea what I was going to be up against. Probably one of the most challenging things, because we started this build just after the sort of lockdown here in New Zealand due to COVID, and that sort of throwing supply out a little bit. So,
right.
For example, like someone might say, how long, you know, what's the lead time on this? And they'd be like, 2 weeks. And then in reality, it's 2 months, which can be quite challenging trying to sequence a build and having enough room to put things and things not sitting out in the weather and, trying to just manage and how fast the build's actually progressing. trying to manage that with building, and you're ripping into the computer and on the phone trying to trying to liaise with someone about the next thing down the road, you know, that might be about three steps ahead of where you really are. It's probably probably the most challenging thing. In terms of self-building, I've just drawn on people when I don't know what to do, and mainly YouTube, to be honest. I just watch in my spare time, I just watch YouTube videos of people building houses, primarily in the States, it seems to be, and they tend to be high-end stuff. So
does that then cause problems with product selection, because you see all these amazing products available in the US and Europe, and then you think, oh well, how can I get one of those windows, or how can I get some of that material? Is that a challenge finding stuff available here, or do you just have to try and find it overseas and import it?
It is a challenge. You do see something and you're like, oh yeah, that looks amazing, and then you do a bit of research, oh yeah, we can't find that. But generally I've gone for more of the approach of find something similar in New Zealand, and use that, and it kind of helps with the building inspections and all of that. You know, it's more of a product that people are familiar with, and we've tended to go down that route than trying to import things and struggle with, you know, delivery and shipping costs and all that sort of stuff.
And what about finance? Have you had any trouble with people trying to convince you to build bigger or grander for capital value?
Not particularly. Like, we knew at the start we wanted to build a more of a high performance home, so we knew we had to keep the floor area down. The land here could be suited to a 300-400 square meter home quite easily, and with the surrounding properties as well, that seems to be the way it goes. But we sort of settled down on 135 square meter, three bedroom home with an office and minimized hallways.
Any problems with like valuations or the bank or anything trying to?
No, haven't had any problems with that. We've been lucky in terms of the financing. We were just like, we didn't at the start, we were like, we don't really know how we're going to do this financially. But I'm just always the one who's like, all right, we'll just figure it out as we go. So luckily enough, my parents would just give us a bit of bridging finance to get going. Right. And then we've actually ended up selling one of our – we had a fortune enough to have the previous house we sold in as a rental property, and just sold that recently to with some reasonable gains on that. So to sort of fund to a point anyway, and then we'll figure out where we go from there. But we're not compromising the quality of the build, especially in terms of the envelope. So the walls, the roof, the windows, insulation, the wraps, cladding. And then if we end up having a cheaper kitchen for the next 5-10 years and maybe upgrade it down the line, well, you know, so be it. They're a lot easier to replace than a wall.
Yep, that's definitely a good strategy. And of course, all that great research that you've done and decisions you're blogging or posting that, you've got some great posts on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and you mentioned YouTube as well. So where's the best places for people to check out what you're up to and see the progress?
Yeah, so we've got the website's got all the links to the social media, ourlifeblock.co.nz, or you can search Our Life Block on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
Mike Pickering there of Our Life Block, and you can check out his great progress there. He's got some beautiful photos on Instagram and on his website at Our Life Block. And you can also check out some of the resources he's got available for building tiny homes, including plans. So you head on over there, and all the links are on his website. And you can find information on homestylegreen.com/249 for episode 249 as well. What did you think of that episode? Love to get your thoughts, comments, feedback. You can always email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. I really like that idea of getting someone like Jason Quinn, getting an energy analysis done really early on in the design stage, even before thinking about the aesthetic, and really putting that function before form. Although, as Mike says, he did have quite a good idea of what would work, mostly based on what he saw in Europe, and that simple, as he called it, an extruded form, which is basically sort of a very simple shape that follows the whole shape of the house. You don't have crazy shaped roofs, you just have one basic cross section all the way through the house. Doesn't mean the house is boring by any means. There's some beautiful, stunning designs that have a fairly simple, almost barn-like form like that. But beauty can be in simplicity. Let me know what you think. As I said, email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com, if you've got any thoughts about this or other episodes. Love to hear from you. And thank you also to the wonderful Patreons who contribute whatever they feel like. You can join them. Click on the Patreon button on the homepage of Homestyle Green. All support is greatly welcome. Thank you very much for listening. Now go make a better place to live.